courageous love is at the core of the Unitarian Universalist Association's Standing on the Side of Love campaign. I continue to embrace this campaign in concept, which is to promote respect for the inherent worth and dignity of every person. It calls for us to do this by standing with all who believe that no person should be dehumanized through acts of exclusion, oppression, or violence. And this campaign is grounded in the belief that all people deserve love and respect, and pursues social change through advocacy, public witness, and speaking out in solidarity with those whose lives are publicly demeaned. This year, as we celebrate National Standing on the Side of Love Day, we are called to recognize those who have lived these values. For this, the second annual Standing on the Side of Love Day service here at UUFSD, we have been asked by the Unitarian Universalist Association to honor courageous love and recognize those whose words and deeds exemplify the values of inclusion, diversity, community, and equality. And so that is what we are going to do. We will take time today to recognize two people, one posthumously and the other very much alive and with us here today. As I said at the celebration of life of Ed Burdett, Ed was a complicated man. He was a man of incredible tenderness, patience, and caring. He was an edgy, in-your-face crusader. It was his mission to teach health and wholeness through sex education to the children of this community, and was his mission to stand proudly for rights, respect, and equality for the GLBT community here and all over the world. He was a tireless volunteer for a number of San Diego area charities, including the Storefront Youth Shelter, which, for those of you who don't know, is San Diego's only emergency shelter program for homeless, runaway, or street youth. Youth that can access the shelter with or without referral and will be assured a safe place to stay until their lives have been stabilized. And this is done with the help of professional staff and caring volunteers, like Ed was. And he was a volunteer at Mama's Kitchen, whose mission is to deliver 3 nutritional meals a day, 7 days a week at no charge to men, women, and children living with AIDS or cancer. On the website, it says that critical illness does not discriminate, and neither does Mama's Kitchen, and neither did Ed. There was a child in need of comfort and support. Ed was there. If equality was threatened, Ed was there. And if any of us were in need of spiritual nourishment, Ed's warm bread was there. Please join me in thanking Ed for his courageous love. In her freshman year, Lauren Mercier, discovered that there was not an active gay-straight alliance at her school. So she convinced 2 other people to start it up and became the vice president of La Costa Canyon High School's gay-straight alliance in 2008. She went on to be secretary of the gay-straight alliance in her sophomore and junior years. As a sophomore, Lauren stood in the rain on the street in front of Calvary Church, holding high a No on 8 sign as people drove by and voters parked to vote at the church's voting center. One man cussed and threw a drink at her from his car, and Lauren smiled, waved, and held the sign higher and firmer still. She went to school late that same day wearing her soaking wet No on 8 t-shirt. Prior to voting day, all that Lauren experienced on her campus was groups wearing Yes on 8 shirts. She went with her mom to the downtown LGBT San Diego No on 8 after party and cried together with hundreds of other voting booth activists as the election results were announced. A few weeks later, Lauren marched in the No on 8 rally through the streets of San Diego to the courthouse, one of a dozen marchers bearing the giant gay pride flag, which I was standing right in front of and didn't know you at the time. For 2 years, Lauren has also organized and led the Day of Silence, celebrating a celebration for her high school, encouraging all students to choose to be silent throughout the entire day in support of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender students who are forced to be closeted. She produced and directed a Day of Silence video for the high school and organized the end of day celebration event. This year, Lauren was one of two youths selected by UUFSD to attend the UU Youth and Young Adults of Color Conference, Multicultural Leadership Conference in Boston in August of 2010. And aside from her public advocacy among her peers, Lauren stands on the side of love and proud support of her two moms and her family of diversity. Please join me in congratulating Lauren and receiving our thanks for her courageous love. I'm a bit verklempt. In June 2005, after I had moved to San Diego, but before I began seminary, I heard about a conference that was supposed to happen in Berkeley, organized and inspired by Rabbi Michael Lerner and the Tikkun community. They were forming an organization called the Network of Spiritual Progressives, and I was excited and fascinated by the concept. The atmosphere in the country at the time, I don't know if you remember, was one where conservative values were dominating the public discussion, and what I believe to be important, the values of love, compassion, respect, acceptance, and forgiveness, were certainly not the dominant values of the day. I was excited by the prospect of those who called themselves spiritual but not religious, and those who were religious and progressive, that they could come together and stand firmly against the dominant ethos of the day and unite us in a new progressive movement. In retrospect, the network of spiritual progressives did not pan out to take the direction that I had hoped. But it did have some part in moving us forward towards what I saw was a more hopeful direction. One of the things that I liked most about this conference was when I heard Rabbi Lerner talk about being realistic. Basically, what he said then and what he is still saying is this: the most significant changes in the U.S. in the past 50 years were won because people fought ideals that were universally seen as unrealistic when their struggles began. The struggle against segregation and for civil rights for minorities. The struggle against patriarchy and discrimination against women. The struggle for GLBT rights. The struggle for the rights of the disabled. All of these struggles were dismissed as unrealistic. Over and over again, people have been told that politics is the art of the possible, and therefore they should give up their highest vision of the good and fight for what is realistic. But history actually teaches us a different message: that you never know what is possible until you fight for what is desirable. Because in that struggle, many desirable goals that seemed impossible begin to appear to be quite possible as more and more people struggle to achieve a more humane, ethically, and spiritually rational world. I am tired of being realistic. Being realistic didn't lead to change in South Africa. Being realistic didn't lead to change in Tunisia. Being realistic didn't lead to a mostly and amazingly peaceful change in Egypt this week. The power of realistic has been challenged. And to me, in a weird twist of fate, the only possible way we can actually survive is by redefining what is truly realistic. I just don't get it. How in the world are we ever going to survive if we don't actually become unrealistic about acts of love and forgiveness? How realistic is it to base a world on violence and fear and intolerance and retribution? In systems built on these attributes, individuals and groups seem frequently to be angry, afraid, vindictive, and petty. And on top of that, it's not just harmful for those who are oppressed due to these destructive systems and cultures. It's harmful for those who do the oppressing. Nelson Mandela said it this way: "It was during those long and lonely years that my hunger for freedom of our own people became a hunger for freedom of all people, white and black. I knew as well as anything I knew that the oppressor must be liberated just as surely as the oppressed. A man who takes away another man's freedom is a prisoner of hatred. He is locked behind bars of prejudice and narrow-mindedness, and I am not truly free if I am taking away someone else's freedom, just as surely as I am not free when my freedom is taken away." The oppressor and the oppressed alike are robbed of their humanity. That is why being previously unrealistic meant that if we were truly going to stand on the side of love, that means that we stand on the side of love all the time, including, as I mentioned last week, the final form of love, which is forgiveness. On the Standing on the Side of Love campaign website, it says, "Standing on the Side of Love continues the prophetic tradition of working for healing in a broken world." And by calling for healing as part of this campaign, we are being called into relationship with those who have somehow caused us harm or pain. For being in relationship may be the only way to heal this pain. Being in relationship may be the only way to heal this kind of pain. If we say we love and that we strive to act in love, and our personal theology or philosophy is based in love, then mustn't we get better at practicing forgiveness? And I want to make sure that you all hear me say, forgiveness takes courageous love. And that courage includes forgiving those who have hurt you or in some way done you harm or spit on you or thrown their drink at you. Having courage is a huge factor in love and forgiveness, geared towards unrealistic change. I know many of you have heard the definition of insanity: when you do the same thing over and over again and expect different results. Well, it takes great courage to move beyond the realistic framework, to do something differently than you have always done in the sake of love and forgiveness. In his letter from a Birmingham jail, Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Though I was initially disappointed at being categorized as an extremist, As I continued to think about the matter, I gradually gained a measure of satisfaction in the label. It's one of my favorite quotes of his. Was not Jesus an extremist for love? Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you? Was not Amos an extremist for justice? Let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream? Was not Paul an extremist? I bear my body the marks of the Lord Jesus. Was not Martin Luther an extremist? Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise, so help me God. And John Bunyan, I will stay in jail till the end of my days before I make a butchery of my conscience. And Abraham Lincoln, this nation cannot survive half slave and half free. And Thomas Jefferson, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men at the time are created equal. That's not in the Martin Luther King quote, I added that. So the question is not whether we will be extremists, but what kind of extremist will we be? Will we be extremists for hate, or will we be extremists for love? Will we be extremists for the preservation of injustice, or for the extension of justice? Of injustice, or for the extension of justice. So on this day where we have honored courageous love of those in this congregation who felt a need to be unrealistic on behalf of love, I ask us all, is it time for us all to stop being so realistic? Is it time for us to be extremists for love? Today we've held up two people who believe strongly that they must stand up for justice and that they must do that peacefully and in love. But the next step in the process, and the way I believe we will truly change our understanding of realism, is through radical commitment to love and healing through forgiveness and reconciliation. We are, in fact, one. We are one human body, and when we tear at each other, we are tearing at ourselves. I ask you to pause for a minute and find someone in your head and in your heart who you feel you have been in conflict with. Close your eyes if you wish, and think. Now, in the context of today's service, with these examples of love and engagement brought forth, what is the most unrealistic thing you can do right now? Would it be calling them and inviting them out for coffee? Would it be walking up to them and giving them a hug? Would it be sending them flowers or candy for Valentine's Day? Or would it be a much simpler gesture, a look, a smile, an extended hand? It could be much harder. It could be the most difficult thing you have ever done. Bishop Tutu wrote, both forgiving and being reconciled to our enemies or our loved ones are not about pretending that things are other than they are. It is not about patting one another on the back and turning a blind eye to the wrong. True reconciliation exposes the awfulness, the abuse, the hurt, and the truth. It could even sometimes make things worse. It is a risky undertaking, but in the end, it is worthwhile because in the end, only an honest confrontation with reality, confrontation with reality, can bring real healing. Superficial reconciliation can only bring superficial healing, he said. An honest confrontation with reality. My dear congregants and friends, it is time to step out of the box. It is time to stop being so realistic. The world is changing, and as we have seen this week, can virtually change overnight. If we want this world to be based on courageous love and forgiveness, if we want to move forward in healing and reconciliation, if we want to more and more stand on the side of love, then we must risk that honest confrontation with what we know as our reality. Then, with a firm grasp of our Unitarian Universalist principles, we can move forward into a world of unrealistic reality, ever more engaged, ever more grounded in the possibility rather than the possible, and firmly committed to unrelenting, unrepentant, and thoroughly courageous love. May it be so. Amen.